listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
Yes, you are, you sexy bastard.
Thank you. I'm good. Happy 4th of July.
I am Paul Strolley.
You are indeed.
Though not in the biblical sense.
Back from the East.
Yes, back from the East. Back from the land from whence I sprang.
I know.
Yes, Connecticut, New York. It was a great trip.
I bet it was.
And Philadelphia. I was in Philadelphia, which is kind of interesting to talk
apropos
about today.
Apropos for today's show.
1776, talking about 1776, on the 4th of July, and I was in Philadelphia, but it was not foul, fuming, or fetid. It was actually very nice.
Oh, really?
I really enjoyed it there, yes. I was at a film festival for a movie I did called Gratitude.
Right. That's right.
And we won.
You won.
Best comedy short, yes.
My goodness, that deserves some sort of a sound effect, doesn't it?
It does, right. You're absolutely right. Best comedy short. Good night, everybody.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, we'd like to thank our presenting sponsor, Breakdown Services. Breakdown Services is, of course, ladies and gentlemen, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, please visit them at BreakdownExpress.com.
And as always, our thanks also go out to PerformingArtsLive.com for their ongoing support of our live arts calendar. PerformingArtsLive.com is the most comprehensive such listing service in Southern California, enabling you to search events by date, category, and region.
You are so right. And ladies and gentlemen, joining us in studio today for this very special edition of State of the Arts are two of the stars of 1776, the masterful 1969 Tony Award-winning musical, which is currently on stage through August 13th, at the Glendale Center Theater in Glendale, California.
Based on events leading up to the drafting and signing of the Declaration of Independence, widely disliked Massachusetts Congressman, obnoxious and disliked, we should actually say, John Adams, joins Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson to bring forward a resolution for independence that will eventually set America free from England's tyranny.
Powerful performances from an impeccably created script make 1776 as relevant today as it was when first written. Add a charmingly witty and yet often emotional score, and 1776 delivers a riveting evening of theater filled with history, humor, heart, and romance.
Regional Musical Theater stars Peter Husband, who portrays John Adams, and Victoria Strong, who plays Adams' beloved wife, Abigail, lead a cast of 26, which has been receiving spectacular reviews. Saw the LA Times one recently, very, very good, from LA critics, and since its opening at the Glendale Center Theater on June 23rd.
That's right, and Paul will be talking to Victoria and Peter in just a few minutes, but first, let's talk about us, all right?
Okay.
I haven't seen you in a week.
All right.
Traveling on the East Coast, as we established at the beginning of the show. What's going on? What else is going on? Why did you go back there? The film festival, we know.
Why did I go back there? Well, before I talk, I want to welcome our two guests. Cool. We'll welcome them. Say hello to them.
How are you?
Hello.
Good to see you.
Peter.
Thanks
Victoria,
for having us.
Thank you.
Great to have you. And, of course, just make it fitting, we have to welcome them formally. Sorry, just one second.
Back!
Sorry, sometimes they just don't listen. Sorry,
especially on hot holidays, such as today.
Yeah. No, but I just it was fun. It was fun to be back east. I could just walk around New York City, and just sort of take that in for hours, which is what I do. I go and I find the food. I get to Grand Central. I go over to Midtown, and I start with a pizza, and I have a slice of pizza, and then I take a break, and then I go and I have some pastrami, and then I take a little break, and then usually it's some insulin.
How much can your stomach endure?
Exactly. But it was very, very fun. I was lucky enough to see, which I'll talk about later, War Horse, because Lena Rideout, who we had on the
one
show
of our guests.
Who's married to my friend Ted Coach, who's also a brilliant actor in his own right. He actually was Hap Lohman in the Brian Dennehy Broadway production of Death of a Salesman. That was, Ted was widely acclaimed for that. He actually has a great thing up on his wall, and Ted would be embarrassed for me to tell this, but I saw it just as I walked into his house. I didn't know about it. It's a tiny little piece of scrap paper on his wall, and it just says, "Dear Ted, saw you as Hap Lohman tonight in Death of a Salesman, and now I can't play the role. Hap Lohman has always been my dream role to play. I have two roles I've always wanted to play, and I can't play Stanley Kowalski in Streetcar because of Brando, and now I can't play Hap Lohman because of you. And my wife and I were so moved by your performance, I just wanted to tell you that. Sincerely, Tom Hanks. So it was just like, nice. What a wonderful little note to get. So it's a very, and then I told you, I'm so envious of Lenya because not only she did this production of Cabaret, and she was Hirschfelded. The Hirschfeld did a caricature, and she's in it.
In the deli now?
Yeah, and she's the Nina. You know how Hirschfeld does the Nina? Mm-hmm. Puts the Nina in there? Mm-hmm. And it's Alan Cumming and Natasha Richardson, because she did the remount of Cabaret. And she's in it. I'm just so envious of that. Wow. I don't know why. Theater history. But that I was staying at their house for a day or two, so I felt like I was steeped in theatrical history.
I was going to say, immersed in all that is Broadway.
Immersed, yes, exactly. It was
fun for you.
Had a good time. And your week?
Well, you know, I mean, a normal week. I mean, pretty busy with this wonderful show, 1776, which I have gone out to Glendale to see, and certainly...
My favorite musical of all time.
Well, I think you did this show.
This show, yes. Well, I did a choral presentation of the show as a political fundraiser, yes. I did Richard Henry Lee.
Well, I think we talked about this at some point. There's an interesting story connected to this.
There is an interesting story.
It was actually a three-night concert version.
We were talking about theatrical nightmares earlier before we went on the air, and this is mine. Senator Dodd, who was not senator yet, it was a fundraiser for that campaign, came up on stage and, well, actually, Representative Leonard came up. We were going to do Sit Down, John, the whole first song. And then Representative Leonard would come up and say, okay, this is our choral presentation, and Mr. Dodd is going to speak at the end of the evening, but first we're going to do all the songs from 1776. So he mistook that. So we did Sit Down, John, and then we froze in tableau for what we thought was going to be her 45-second talk before we continued. But he mistook it, and he came up on stage and did his speech, which was 45 minutes. So we were frozen in tableau behind him, waiting to go into the first song. And we were literally, I mean,
that
aching.
Is a nightmare.
The arms are aching, and we can't look at one another because we're going to laugh. We're all in tuxedos. Yeah. It was just that sort of thing. We can't look at one another. And so Senator Christopher Dodd comes up, and he's talking. And I'm standing there, and the guy who played John Adams just leans over to me in this silent tableau as best he can, and he goes, "Sit down, Dodd. Sit down, Don. For God's sake, Don." So now we have a tableau where we're actually vibrating shaking, because then it became like that operator game. Because we're all in a line. It's just like, he said, "Sit down, Don. Sit down, Don." All the way down. And then we ended up doing the whole thing. But, it was it's a great musical and very, very excited to see the Glendale Center Theater. Is it Glendale Center Theater or Glendale Theater Center?
Glendale Center Theater.
Because I was just at Edgemar Theater Center. And
yes,
I kept getting that confused, which I think
I did a show there.
Yeah, saw that.
Yeah, that's a great space.
It is. It is.
And they do nice stuff there.
Yeah, we just did a show over there as well. But
So we should probably introduce this beautiful woman that's sitting amongst these three guys here in the studio on the 4th of July.
Lucky me.
Leave us do that. Is that my job?
That is your job.
Okay, let me find it. Michael, you can't do the two-sided pages on me. It just throws me. Anyway, we should get down to business anyway. Our first guest is known as one of the country's most enduring stars of musical theater, having played Mother in the U.S. National Tour of Ragtime. Regionally, she has appeared as Betty Blake in The Will Rogers Follies, Golda in Fiddler on the Roof, Margaret in Light in the Piazza, and Anna in The King and I. She's currently appearing, as we mentioned, as Abigail Adams, loving wife of John Adams, who has her fixation with saltpeter, but that's a whole other thing. In 1776, the musical at the Glendale Center Theater, the beautiful and gloriously talented Miss Victoria Strong is with us. Yes, yes. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Thanks for joining us. And both Thanks of you, thank me. You for taking off your holiday.
No
You
problem.
Know what? And she drove in from, I believe...
Alhambra.
And I don't even know where that is.
Close to Pasadena.
Is it? Well, God bless
San
you
San Marino,
for that.
Pasadena area, yeah.
Thank you for doing that. And Peter drove in from Simi Valley.
Oh, my God.
So no, Sylmar.
Sylmar.
It wasn't that far.
Yeah.
And this is still a holiday, isn't it?
Yeah.
Doesn't it feel a little bit like a holiday right here?
Very much so.
It is. And yeah. if you're going to use your July 4th, at least use it to promote 1776.
Hey, there you go.
You know.
Amen.
But so now you have you mentioned earlier, but please share it with the listeners. You have a long history with Glendale. Can you share how that all started?
Sure. As a young actress, I saw they were doing a musical, which is mostly what I know. I've done a few straight plays, but mostly musical theater. And Michael Sterling was actually directing this production in 1981 of The Sound of Music.
And Michael was directing at 9?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
And
wow.
I walked in and eventually got Liesl and started my relationship with the Glendale Center Theater as a young kid in her 20s. And the first musical they had done there, it was reel-to-reel tape. I think you were the one who convinced them that they could do musical theater.
Well, yes, that was a whole situation that stemmed with Alan and his wife.
Mm-hmm. Alan and Sandy.
Alan and Sandy Dietlein, who believed that musicals could not be done at that theater. Mm-hmm. And I made a bet with them, and I said, first of all, I said, why? And they said, because of the size of the stage and the fact that their audiences weren't conditioned to musicals, rather mm-hmm. comedies, light comedies, mm-hmm. and they simply wanted to laugh. And I said, you know what? If you'll take me on, I'll make you a bet that musicals can be done here. I will write a musical review that will be educational and entertaining of four great composers' works on Broadway, and it will educate your audiences. So they took me on, and I wrote this thing like a madman in 3 weeks, called mm-hmm. it From Broadway with Love, called all of my pals who were professional singer dancers, costumers, etc. I said to the theater, just a white baby grand is all I need and a beautiful floor. And we were on for 8 weeks, on Mondays, but for 8 weeks, and it went through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did the presentation of The Sound of Music for them to show them that it could be done in the theater, and that was the beginning of now what is their most popular.
How long ago show. Was that?
That was
81?
Yeah.
Now, they don't do musicals exclusively now.
No.
But they do, and you said they always have, they haven't been dark in 65 mm-hmm. years.
They're 65 years next year, 64th year this
Unbelievable.
Year. Unbelievable. And the longest continuously running musical, theater in the United States.
Yeah.
That is so coincidental, too, because I'm actually writing a musical about you that's just called Sterling.
Oh.
Yeah, it's
nice
a one-man
title.
Show. That
Sterling
I'm
the musical.
Sterling
there
the musical.
We go.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Yeah,
that'll
so
be a tell-all.
Yeah, you have to just have to find someone to play you.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe
Peter
nice dream
can
ballet
take
that.
But, no, well, that was also a great idea to not only begin with a musical, but to begin with a review that was sort of like a baptism, you know, so like
exactly.
to share
mm-hmm.
sort of the, you know,
exactly.
so you can, you know, something for everybody. That was a good idea. Did
yeah.
you come up to that all by yourself?
I did.
Wow.
I did. And the Dietlines were kind enough to indulge me, and yet it turned out a fantastic event for them.
Very
but we're
well.
Talking about Vicky, who
Very
was
well.
Attached
right.
to that show.
Right.
So that was my first show there, and then I went on to do a few plays after that there, and went on and found other Civic Light operas, and you know, you go where the work is as an actor. And,
right.
But that's always been home for me, and it's nice to come back, because
yeah.
After all these years of gaining experience, I'm able to work in a lovely, intimate space, and that's one of the things I really love about Glendale Center, is people are an arm's length away from you, and instead of doing a big, huge proscenium with a orchestra pit and all the things you have to sing over, you're able to hone in and bring in a very organic and authentic performance at this space, I think, that you miss
right.
on a larger scale.
Now, when Vicky says an intimate space, though, Paul, it is a 400-seat theater in the round.
Right.
Which is actually a good mid-sized house.
Is it technically in the round, or is it a thrust?
Technically in
or?
The round.
Really?
Technically in the
around.
Round.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And it's all very state-of-the-art in sound and lighting and... really, some of the productions that have been done out there, if not all of them, certainly with musicals, which are the bigger, you know, productions to deal with there, how they pull some of them off are
right.
extraordinary. I mean, Beauty and the Beast comes to mind right
mm-hmm.
away because it was so mammoth, you know, Disney's Beauty and the Beast.
Exactly.
And to have done that in the round, first of all, let alone with you know, that many characters in costume.
Plates and cups and spoons kept coming out of those tunnels. And I said, how are they doing this? And I know the space back there. What are they doing?
Yeah, spectacular.
Yeah.
Truly spectacular. All of them. Scarlet Pimpernel, all of anything they do, anything they touch. Phantom, anything they touch is spectacular.
And I would imagine something, you know, there's just some shows that if you're familiar with them, I'm familiar with 1776 from, you know, not only having done it in an abbreviated way, but also the film, which I love. There are certain shows that sort of would lend themselves to that, and I would think that 1776, you must feel like you're in the room.
Absolutely.
You must feel, you know, that must be the dynamic. I mean, you were talking something about that. You were saying the sort of the feel of, you know, when you saw it, that it sort of had that dynamic.
Yes, it
to
did. It was like you were sitting in Independence Hall, like you were a part of the galley, you know, in looking down at the Congress.
One of the wonderful things that our director Todd Nielsen did was take out certain seats in the theater to make entrances happen, and desks to, like, John Hancock's desk and Benjamin Franklin's desk are actually inside where the audience sits.
Oh wow!
So you're literally an arm's length away from actors, and you literally do feel like you are just sort of in this tennis match, watching this happen right in front of you.
Yeah,
right.
but it's easy to find that after the fact. I know at the start of it all, I think everybody was wondering, how are we going to get these 25 delegates on stage in such
space.
A way? Yeah, exactly. Sitting there, and. But he did it. And afterwards, it's just what you said. It really feels like you are in the Congress.
Well, you know, it's sort of like the, you know, as all good in the round theater is, the audience becomes a character.
Mm.
The audience becomes another element.
Yes.
Because, you know, the only forgiving thing, and the only, you know, I would say monetarily forgiving thing about In the Round, is that your sets can usually be very, very simple because you don't want
to
block anything.
They
have to be.
Yeah, it's all pieces.
So it's more so, but that's also kind of fun too, because then the focus is put back on the work. Someone told me, or rather on the content, you know, things don't get lost in grand sets. I don't know who it was that we had on recently, but they were talking about the first production of Cats that was in London, which was, I'm not sure if they had it entirely right, and the person who told me wasn't even sure that they had it right, but apparently it was almost In the Round, very simple, not the grand sets that they had when it was here. It was much more like a ragtag kind of troubadour type of feel, and I would have loved to have seen that, because I think, once again, the focus goes back on performance.
Well, you know, and it is always about the talent, isn't it? I mean, and Vicky is a tremendous testament to that, as is Peter, but Glendale still does something a little bit above and beyond what the normal theater in the round, I think, does. And they find a way to do sets. Your set is very simple and very effective for exactly the right reasons that it is what it is today in the production. But they always find some way to kind of kick ass, if you will, pulling out the big guns on certain set things or certain ideas that might exist on the walls surrounding the theater, as your set has that attraction to it, giving it the real feel of you know, Independence Hall.
The calendar.
Yeah. Simple little things like that come to mind that you know, are always something special that add to...
On the outside the seating area?
Inside the theater. Yes, above the seating area.
Okay.
All the way around sometimes it'll be complete, you know, scenic design on those walls.
Oh,
or
so,
projection, perhaps.
So the whole auditorium becomes the set.
Exactly.
And Paul, when you see this, too, it's not just the theater in the round and the two tunnels that she's spoken of. It's also the aisles going up and down that we are constantly running up and down in the middle of the audience.
Yeah.
And so they're right there. And sometimes, you know, the actors are standing and or sitting right next to audience members.
Oh, man. I just love that.
So.
And, you know, with this particular production, and certainly it's a story that we all know, yet at the same time I say that, I don't think it's one that we know as well as as what happens when we see this play. But because literally I looked around the theater at these 400 people, and everybody was kind of sitting on the edge of their seat, especially as the show is drawing to a close.
Yes.
You know what's going to happen, but you really don't. You're seeing it. It's like you're understanding it for the first time.
There's
there's so much detail that happens at the end of the play that you don't realize. You know what happens, but it's all the fine tuning and the detail and the layers and the textures of everything that's in the writing and that's in our performers and in the beautiful set and the lighting. It's just really a remarkable experience that I never knew all those dispatches happened with George Washington. Mm-hmm, I never knew about, you know, bringing back poor Caesar Rodney, who's dying of cancer.
Right.
If we didn't have his sign, you know, it really pulls you because it's our story.
Right.
And I think that's probably why the audience feels so, because it's not once upon a time there was a lady named Margaret in Italy, or, you know, this is our history. This
right.
is where we came from. And the whole slavery clause, the whole intense fighting about who is going to be free, and in our passionate performance by Peter here as John Adams, just I think is what accelerates us as an audience member to care even more.
You can hear the audience's silence and gasp
yeah.
at the end when we're waiting for it to end. Everybody knows it gets adopted.
Yeah.
But in those moments before
mm-hmm.
that people don't know about the details of certain delicates, and it was just, you know, it could have gone
one
way
vote.
Or another.
Exactly. Right.
And you can feel the audience's silence. And many times, like it happened on Saturday night and Saturday matinee, when Thompson says it is finally adopted, we all have to hold because the audience is just bursting out in applause. Not just applause, but they're exhaling.
You can feel
the relief
on
their part. So you know they're with you
When they're all signing, too. Sometimes that final tableau, when the lights go down, there's like 5 seconds of silence. It's really quite extraordinary
because
everyone's just sort of taking it in.
And it gives to the actors on stage just as much as it appears to be giving to the audience.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's
rewarding. As an actor, you live for that, for feeling that. And I think the important distinction, a point that you both made, is that, yes, everyone knows the results. Or, you know, we all know that it got adopted. But very few of us, as you mentioned, really know the details of it. I mentioned to Michael before the show is that this is like Jesus Christ Superstar for me, in that I learned more about Christ's last days from Jesus Christ Superstar than I did from going to Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned more about the Declaration of Independence from 1776. You mentioned the slavery clause, which I had no idea there was any mention of that. And the fact that, you know, Jefferson wrote it, and Jefferson had already, you know, resigned himself to release his slaves, and Rutledge's role in that, and it just
and had not Rutledge done that, well, what would have happened in the Civil War?
Yeah,
would that have?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so all of those, I think that is sort of the presentation of all of those details are what really informs that whole release at the end, because people it got adopted, but they never really thought, what world would it have been without this? Or would it have been, you know, we would be a different
mm-hmm.
world.
And there's not a show that people don't come out afterwards. And we stand outside in the lobby together. And there is not a show that people come out saying, wow, we had no idea. I mean, we knew, but we had no idea what an inspiration it was to see what the delegates did.
Wow.
And then the collective, now, can you all just take that to today's Congress and pass that on?
So many people say, I wish our Congress could come see this show.
Yeah,
I wish they felt the same way you did.
I think it's, I think it's probably a near-perfect script, wouldn't you say?
Well, it's just, I mean, consider the source material as, you know, what you're writing about. I mean, there's also moments of it that just, there's isolated lines that are just so heavy, and they're, it's almost too much to take in, because you were mentioning that unlike a lot of musicals, there's a real significant book here. There's a, you know, it's not just like, you know, song, you know, conduit of text and song. You know, there's meaty scenes
right.
in between. And, you know, the things that were just talked about, one of the things that sticks out in my head is, it's actually a line from one of the songs, but you really think about it for any length of time. Most men with nothing would rather protect the possibility of being rich than face the reality of being poor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, you know, this we're talking about founding a country here. It's just like, there's a whole lot of fear. These were men of property. These were men that had the thing. These were, you know, really as regal as anyone in this country would be without, you know, having a monarchy. And they stood to lose it all, including their lives.
Yes.
Hence Dickinson's stance.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, the other thing, Paul, about the show, and I wonder if you agree, when I said it's a near-perfect script, as far as I'm concerned, the one thing that I really love about the writing of this show is that out of all of these characters, no matter how small that character is or in size or to your size, you know, to one of the major leads in the show, everybody has a moment in this show.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has a moment.
Well,
it comes at some point or another.
Which brings to mind Judge Wilson, who I was actually reading about on the internet today, because he's the one who gives that pivotal turn, and everything comes down to him in the version of the musical. And he honestly doesn't. He's kind of a patsy for Dickinson from Pennsylvania the entire time.
Right,
and Benjamin Franklin is at odds with him. He doesn't say much, but boy, when it gets down to for those of you who haven't seen the show, I won't, you know, but it gets down to this pivotal moment. And when he stands up, this Judge Wilson, Clay, who plays this character, it's just, it's mesmerizing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got everybody in his hands right there, and everything depends on him. And it's fascinating.
And it's a wonderful balance with humor as well. I mean, there's so many wonderful dramatic moments, but the way John Adams and Ben Franklin are written, right when you think, you know, they just smack you with a funny line and it like releases the tension, and it's just a lovely, joyous ride.
And it humanizes them too. You know,
yes.
It's sort of like they're not faces on money anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that people have said about Peter's performance, is that he makes him so human.
Oh.
You know, when Abigail comes, he's not just this annoying jerk who's trying to make this thing happen.
Exactly.
You know, he's a husband, and he's a father, and he's a patriot, and he's passionate. And you see all of those wonderful levels, and you understand why they think he's obnoxious and disliked, but you really love this guy.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
really cheering for him.
Right. Anyone that feels that strong, I mean, feels that strongly about what he's doing, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's obnoxious and disliked for the people who don't want to be bothered initially,
mm-hmm.
but then for him to win them over.
And one of my favorite lines that Peter says, well, it is my favorite line, is this is a revolution. We're going to have to offend somebody.
Yes, exactly.
Because everybody's complaining about the what's the words, and they're worried
you're
hurting someone's feelings.
And certain sections of the parliament, and you know, it's like, yeah.
And I must say that the characters of Thomas Jefferson and his wife, Martha, played by Jeff Druschall, is that how you say his last name? Is it Druschall or Druschall?
I don't know. Either way,
I like both of them.
Yeah. Forgive me if
Jefferson,
I'm saying it wrong.
Just say Jefferson.
And
Jefferson.
The lovely Michaela Lee.
Mm.
The
mm-hmm.
entrance of Michaela Lee as Martha Jefferson is quite spectacular, isn't it, with her husband?
And I'm sure most enjoyable.
Yes. The kiss goes on for
my That's the scene.
It's spectacular.
And we also, you know, and also we
and little kids
let's just
laugh. One little boy covered his eyes.
Oh, that's
really
can't.
Really sweet.
Oh, okay. So there's a little, it's a spectacular entrance.
Yes, it's a spectacular entrance and quite humorous. The gentleman, Peter and his cohort make great fun of this.
Mm-hmm.
They have great fun.
Oh, well,
fun
it's
with
so
it,
funny.
Rather,
I mean, isn't it just basically, I mean, without getting too graphic on the radio, aren't you and...
How graphic can you get on the radio?
Well, on the internet radio, you can. But I mean, isn't it just sort of like... if I remember correctly, aren't Adams and Franklin just basically waiting for them to finish up?
Adams comes barreling in just saying, well, it's been a week, come on now, you know, and then Martha comes in, and they're swept away in this, and once again, Adams is frustrated, and Franklin is amused, again, as usual, but it just continues to up the ire of Adams, who
says,
please, can we just write this declaration and move, okay, and then,
get back to business.
Exactly.
Because we all know they ain't talking about a violin.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and the way she sings that, I just, every night, it's a joy for me Being that scene with Michaela playing Martha.
It's a great song.
You know.
Well, Michael, you mentioned earlier about everyone in the show having moments.
Yes,
you know.
Indeed.
And I think that I haven't seen this production yet. I really do look forward to seeing it. I look forward to any opportunity to see this play, but this production especially from what I've heard. Not only molasses to rum, you know, barn burner of a song, but also Mama Look Sharp is just the, we were talking earlier in the waiting room before we came in. I don't know if there's a sadder song in a musical than Mama Look Sharp.
It's quite haunting. Yes.
Oh, and it's just, you know, you had mentioned when the minute, you know, as the song goes on and audiences really start to get what's taking place there, that he's basically calling to her to come find him before he leaves. It's just like, it's so heartbreaking.
The description of war from a young boy's eyes to, the calling out for a mother trying to find her dying son.
Out on the field.
Crawling out on the green, on the field.
Yeah.
And also knowing historically that at that time, they would go to battles like they were parades. I mean,
they were younger than 15.
No, I mean, the civilians would.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, civilians would actually go there. If there was a battle, they would go and they would bring a box lunch.
Right, right.
You know, they thought it was this, you know, I mean, you only need to look at the way the British dressed for battle. It's like, you might as well put a big target on you for the,
right.
You know.
Right.
But I just found that that song is just, and the film is actually done beautifully.
And again, going back to the impeccable writing of the show and the placement of the songs.
Yeah.
They place them because they're funny songs, there are funny lines, there are serious lines, and then there are serious songs. And they are, in my estimation, just so beautifully placed. And it's right before intermission, and it just...
And that is as important to the content and the rhythm and the pace of a musical as the songs themselves.
It brings the reality.
They fall. We had George Chakiris and Russ Tamblyn on one show. We had Riff and Bernardo on one show.
Cool.
And we were talking about...
No rumbling went on, did it?
No. They both could still rumble, though. They're both just very, you know, just like... It's like they must have paintings in their attics, these two guys. But they talked about exactly that with West Side Story. They were talking about the flip of Officer Krupke and Cool. Those totally inverted songs, and it makes it a different show. The film is completely different from the stage play, because in the film, Officer Krupke is very early, and it's all silly, and they sort of get past it. But in the musical, Officer Krupke comes way toward the end as sort of this, you know, post-rumble.
It's been a while.
Thing. So, I mean, I don't want to go off on West Side Story, but to make echo your point
placement.
About the
Well, you know, Paul,
placement.
We do want to take this moment to tell our listening audience how they can go see 1776, which, again, is on stage at the Glendale Center Theater now through August 13th, presented Thursday through Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. with Saturday matinees at 3 p.m., Sunday matinees are also presented at 3 p.m. on July 10th and July 17th only. So that's this coming weekend and the following weekend. Tickets range between $23 and $26. Can you imagine that?
I know. That's unbelievable. Yeah.
In this economy, a Broadway-caliber production in a beautiful theater, mid-sized house where you're actually part of the action.
Reach out and touch it.
Absolutely. And pending the date and time, of course, that ticket price varies. But discount rates are also available for groups of 15 or more. And the Glendale Center Theater, ladies and gentlemen, is easily located on Orange Street, 324 North Orange Street, Glendale, California. Reservations, ticket purchases may be made by calling 818-244-8481. Let me say that once again. Area code 818-244-8481. Box office hours are Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And for further information, please visit their website, GlendaleCenterTheater.com, and that's center and theater spelled R-E at the end of those two
words. I was just going to say that.
Yeah, yeah. Very good.
GlendaleCenterTheater.com.
And we'll remind people about that at the end of the program. But, Paul, we want to get to a review that you have done. That you're going to do, right?
Yes, and it's sort of an informal review because I did not know I was watching it in a reviewing capacity, but I saw War Horse at Lincoln Center. My friend Lena is in it. And
Lena
Rideout, who was able to secure me house seats, which were just wonderful.
Thank you, Lena.
12 rows back and sitting in the middle. And this is the National Theatre of Great Britain's production of War Horse, in association with Handspring Puppet Company. And really, you know, when you think puppets, because I'm uneducated about puppets, I thought, oh, you know, it's puppets. You know, how much can puppets vary? And I was educated on that point. They're not puppets. They're sculptures that move. Mm. It is unlike anything you've ever seen on stage. I mean, they because they're puppets, these horses are able to fully act for you. Lena and two other puppeteers work Baby Joey, who is the primary horse in the story. It's based on a children's book about World War I and how the horses were taken from the farmers and everything and put into the war effort and all of that. But she works the Baby Joey, the horse, as a foal, and it's three people. It's head and heart and hind is the way they break it up, and they actually have to rotate their positions to avoid repetitive motion injuries because of how involved that and intricate it is. I mean, the ears are moving, the head is moving, and it's they're obviously for the baby horse, they're all sort of standing alongside it or outside it, mm-hmm. and just moving it, but they sort of vanish into the fabric of the play. And then when the horse comes out and is fully grown, two are inside this sort of lattice shell, and one is outside operating the head and the ears and all of that. But it's just amazing to watch, because it's not only these things that are the puppets. They had crows that were flying around that were puppets. They had a goose that was running around in the farm scenes. And then they have other, when they go into battle, they have some simpler horses that are operated by just one person. It's basically, you know, a representative shape of a horse on one person. But then they operate, the soldier on top of the horse is also a puppet.
Wow.
So they're able to do astounding and really powerful moments in the battle scenes when you know an actor's body would not break apart,
right?
And a puppet's body can break apart in a battle scene.
Yeah.
So you see these, you know, horrific things. So Tom Waits once said, "I love." He said, "I love beautiful melodies telling me terrible things." And this is just that. There's some very jarring visuals, but they're executed so beautifully and so ballet-like. It really is unlike anything that I've seen on a stage, and it really is worth every penny. A cast of 35, and every penny is up on that stage, and just beautifully executed, and cannot recommend it high enough. So War Horse, that is at the Vivian Beaumont Theater at Lincoln Center for the foreseeable future.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, lucky you.
I'm saying at least 3 years it'll be
well,
there.
Well, the taste, wonderful. I think, that we all got on the Tony Awards of that show was appetizing, to say the least.
Oh, yeah. You know, if you're in New York, you beg, borrow, steal, get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I had the pleasure of going to the opening of Twist at the Pasadena Playhouse recently, and it is a timely adaptation of Charles Dickens' classic novel with a contemporary score set in New Orleans on the eve of the Great Depression. And I'm not going to say more than that right now, but it was an incredibly valiant effort in a beautiful, beautifully produced show and a fantastic sets, lighting.
This is the one Debbie Allen is
Debbie
involved,
Allen yes. directed, yes, and the lovely and quite gorgeous Tamira Gray from American Idol stars in this production. She is stellar. She is a true star on that stage. And it was a great evening. It was fun. The choreography of Debbie's choreography and her associate that did that for this show and the children in it and the young boy that plays Twist.
It's a twist on Oliver Twist.
It is,
right.
Indeed.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. I mean, it's just a wonderful evening of theater. The book, I must say, being a brand new show that's running out of the gate here and heading to New York, which it will get to New York, but the book does need still some attention to it, but I certainly think it's worthy of anybody seeing it here in Los Angeles if you can get a ticket. It's selling out like hotcakes.
No.
Yeah. We're actually going to have to Myra Gray on the show with us, Paul, in a couple of weeks.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, now that we have a few minutes left, I think we should talk to Vicki and to Peter about their career as actors and other things that they've done, in addition to the wonderful 1776.
Yeah, we should. We've been a little 1776 heavy up front.
Well, we love that show, and it's the appropriate time to be talking about it on this here being the 4th of July. And with 6 weeks left in the run, ladies and gentlemen, you have plenty of time to go see it. But, Vicki, let's start with you. I mean, my goodness, of all the shows that you've done these wonderful roles that most women would beg to be doing, mm-hmm. these roles, Anna and the King and I.
And she got one of two roles. I mean, there's only two female roles in 1776.
That's true. That's right. That's right. And one of the great things that I saw you in out at Glendale was playing Betty in the Will Rogers Follies.
Mm-hmm.
And what a fantastic production that was.
Thank you. Yeah.
And Danny Michaels, who's also in your show, 1776, was Will Rogers in mm-hmm. that production. Is there one favorite role that you have played in your career?
So many people ask me this question. And at first it was Anna. I think The King and I is probably one of my favorites. And, you know, My Fair Lady. But I think I was really blessed with Light in the Piazza a couple of years
Very
ago.
Very special.
And you either love it or you hate it. I've found that people are either very, very black and white about their opinion
about
that show.
I love it. Yeah.
And that's okay. But that was quite an amazing experience. And of course, Ragtime was such a huge part of my life.
Yes. Well, you did the tour. How long did you do the tour?
Well, I was on the tour for 3.5 years.
Wow.
Holy cow.
I started out as a swing. Mm-hmm. And an Emma Goldman understudy, and literally sat backstage and watched everybody else work and cried and cross-stitched. And but, you know, I had to earn my stripes. You know, I did my time and eventually got into the show and understudied both Mother and Emma and had my own track in the show. And then eventually, after 3 years of patience, the role came my way. Our mother decided to leave. She was pregnant. And they let me do the last 6 months. So patience is a virtue. I don't think I would want to do it again.
Yeah.
But it was certainly a role worth waiting for and quite an extraordinary time in my life.
Wow.
How you exciting. Were, my another college friend of mine and another college friend of Leni's was on that tour as well. He was on the tech side of things. Greg Burton was his name.
Uh-huh.
And he did that. He was on the road with Ragtime for a couple of years. So you probably worked
probably
on the same.
Probably know Greg.
It's a fabulous show.
Yes.
Oh, wonderful show.
Yeah. And I just found I was looking all over and I finally found the first soundtrack to Ragtime, the Randy Newman for the film. Because mm-hmm. that was a hard thing to find for years, because once Ragtime the musical hit, you couldn't find the film at all. Mm-hmm. There's some lovely little songs in that musical.
Have you seen the show yourself?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes. I've seen that, but I also love the film.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I'm a big Jimmy Cagney fan, and it was his last movie.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you?
I didn't know it was his last movie, but I, too, am a Cagney fan.
Really?
Yes, sir.
You don't strike me as a Cagney fan.
Really?
I don't know. What is a Cagney fan like?
I liked his swagger. I liked his confidence. I mean, being a little short guy that he was, you know? He brought a lot to the table. I think. Peter, you are a man of
Speaking
distinction.
Of short guys.
Nice segue, Michael.
A man of distinction in the arts here. You not only...
Well, you look to me to be about 5'7".
Yeah.
Well,
now,
that's
how would
now.
You know that?
It used to be 5'9".
It used to be 5'9". Yeah. We were talking about that.
And they keep twisting the knife.
It happens, Peter.
Yeah, okay, it thanks.
You have certainly been a man of distinction on the theater stage, playing a lot of wonderful roles, but you also have quite a career in television and film and voiceovers and commercials. Lots of commercials, huh?
Yeah, you know, when you move out to L.A., you do what you scramble and you do whatever you can to just keep moving ahead.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I spent a lot of time doing commercials and a lot of industrials and infomercials and a lot of hosting of things.
I watched some of your work on your website, actually. I went to your website today, which is in his name, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. So it's, you know, you do a variety of things to just to keep yourself moving. And, you know, it had been a while since I'd been on stage, honestly. And so when I decided to come back, somehow I stepped into this rather meaty role of Adams. And honestly, I hadn't been quite prepared as just to how meaty it was until I got into it. I went, oh.
You were not familiar with 1776?
No, I was. You know, interestingly, I had seen it 30 years ago just outside D.C. with Howard Da Silva playing Franklin.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, the Benjamin Franklin, the fabulous Benjamin Franklin that I'm opposite now, John Butts, was in that production 30 years ago.
Really?
Wow. I forget which character he played, but we were chatting about it, talking about a small theater world,
yeah,
or just a small world in altogether. But I had seen that and loved it. And of course, I saw the movie once, but other than that, I'd always known that someday, geez, I'd love to play John Adams.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm still looking for him in there.
But, is it Howard Silva?
Or Howard Da Silva.
Da Silva. Because he didn't do the recording. He did it on Broadway, and then he got sick. And then when they recorded the album, it's someone else singing the role of Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, I've heard a number of stories.
And then he got better, and he did the film.
Yeah.
Because he is in the film.
Oh, he's fat. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, that's him.
He's hysterical.
He's terrific.
Peter just cited John Butts. Did you say Butts, or is it Butts? Butts.
You know what?
I think it's Butts.
Is it?
Because we talked about
B-U-T-Z.
We talked about the kidding that probably happened.
Yes, well, must have.
Yeah. So,
his claim.
He changed his name. It was originally Ass.
And
he just changed it to Butts because it was too awkward.
He would appreciate
man.
That.
Yeah.
No, but he's fabulous.
John Fatass. Yes, John Fatass. With the hyphen.
John, if you're listening, I apologize deeply. Deeply for my co-host's indiscretion.
Oh, come on.
He's a fabulous Benjamin Franklin.
He is.
Sure,
he also he can say this. He has played literally every principal male role in that show,
with
the exception of Jefferson, right?
Yeah, I forget, but he swung around all of the different roles I know.
13 roles.
And this is his seventh production of 1776.
And he's brilliant. He looks like he stepped right off the currency. I
really?
Mean, yeah, amazing.
Yeah, exactly. No,
well,
he's fabulous.
I'm very excited.
So fun to play with.
We have to take this moment now that we do, folks. At the end of the show, we always baptize our guests, kind of initiate them into the hall of shame,
uh-oh,
if you will.
Yeah.
Isn't that our cue to go quickly, Vicky?
It's to recant one of your most embarrassing moments on the theater stage. Could be in a film, too. Could be on a television set. It could be anywhere. So, Victoria, we're going to start with you.
Wow.
Thank God.
I haven't experienced a whole lot, knock on wood. I had a panic once. We were on the road with Ragtime, and you change theaters every 2 or 3 weeks. And as an ensemble member, I had to run on and do a scene, and I was hearing that the baseball game was going on, and that was my cue to get in position, and I could not find stage left to save my life, because it was a new theater, and it was like maybe our first or second show, and I was kind of like looking, they have signs very well posted, but for some reason my brain was not computing where I was supposed to go. So I ended up over on stage right and realized that's not the way to go, and I'm hearing the end of the song, and I am panicking, and I ran downstairs, and I ran around, and again, found myself stage right, and I finally went behind the scrim, and I literally made it, but it was heavy panting.
It's like Spinal Tap, getting lost.
Yeah, I walked up on stage, and it was just like one of those moments I never want to relive again.
Oh,
but,
my God.
Yeah. And I always have this nightmare that I'm driving into the parking lot in my street clothes, and I hear the overture.
Yeah,
and I'm not ready.
That's like a waiter nightmare. That's like a waiter nightmare. I have that same acting nightmare that I just get there and I have to be on stage like in a nanosecond.
Yeah, and I'm not ready. I have no makeup on. I have no clothes on. I have to be on. That's my panic. Some people say they're naked and they don't know their lines, but for me, it's not being prepared. That's my biggest frightening moment.
I can't imagine you ever not being prepared.
Thank you. I think that's probably why I have.
Now, Peter, on the other hand, tell us about
it. Exactly. Well, I have to tell you up front, I have a very selective memory. And I know that there have been horrific things that have happened to me on stage over the years. But most of them I clearly must have blocked. I do remember, I'm trying to think, several years ago, the last musical I did, which was many years ago, was Grand Night for Singing. And this is a small thing, so I know that there are much worse discretions I have made on stage. But, I was doing a Surrey with a fringe on top. You know, it's got like three verses and there's blocking and everything else. And I just went into the second verse twice, you know, which is no big, right. But it changes the blocking. And I remember being, and this was a small, intimate stage, and the audience is right there. And I'm trying to get the actor saying, you know, I'm doing the same one, so let's kind of redo the blocking on this, and I'm trying to get them to, you know, and it just becomes, and when that happens, that starts messing with your mind, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, once that gets in there.
Yeah.
You find yourself tripping on lines later that you never did before because that occupied them.
I remember years ago also, I was playing Iago in Othello, and years ago, and I remember I loved doing dramatic pauses. You know, it's a bad habit, and our own director here said, you know, you could pick that up a little bit. I said, well, no, you give me a second, and I'll make a dramatic pause out of it. And I remember a stage manager backstage going, started yelling to me the next line, and I finally looked and I said, no, I know, I'm having a moment out here. I said, Iago, give me a break.
I'm acting
silently, but I'm acting.
I need it.
I'm acting like tough acting, ten acting.
Yeah. Well, so much to learn.
I thought you were gonna when you started to tell that story. I was just waiting for you to say, well, you know, it's not really that, you know, catastrophic. But I was on the road with Ragtime, and I took down all the signs that gave people directions to stage left.
There you go. Someone's true, man.
Oh, my God. I should have come up with that one.
I was that was so funny about the story. It was just like, you know, and I it's not like I couldn't find a prop. I couldn't find this door. I couldn't find stage left. It's a pretty...
Some of these older theaters, you can't cross behind the stage.
Well, if it's theater in the round, I understand.
Yeah. There is no left, is there? Or there's lots of left.
Yeah, you have to cross underneath the theater because a lot of these old places...
you don't have that connection, yeah.
It could be a maze at times.
A friend of mine who was on the road for touring with some show made the comment that, you know, the only thing that tells you when you're in a different theater is the exit lights. The exit signs. He's like, you just go out, you do, you know, for him, it was just sort of getting used to where the exit lights were, you know, because you couldn't really see anything.
Right.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. I just want to say one more time that you can see Peter Hussman and Victoria Strong in 1776, now on stage through August 13th at the Glendale Center Theater in Glendale, California. Simply call the box office at 244-8481. You can actually fax your order in, too, to the fax machine there, 818-244-5042. What a nice courtesy. Box office hours are Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. For further information, visit their website at Glendale Center Theater. That's R-E on both the words center and theater. And Tim Dietlein, who runs that theater, has a beautiful season coming up after 1776, and that includes Beau Jest, a hilarious comedy, August 18th through September 24th, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, Paul. Plays that stage September 29th through November 19th, and their traditional annual spectacular production of A Christmas Carol, November 25th through December 24th.
All right, and we'll also have information about that on our website.
Yes, we will.
StateOfTheArtsLA.com. That's StateOfTheArtsLA.com. No R-E's to worry about on
there
ours.
There you go.
But thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
And happy 4th.
Same to you. And Michael, we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Paul. See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.